As we get started today, I want to share a story with you, and perhaps you heard of the couple who had been married for about 50 years, and on the anniversary of their 50th year having been married, they were headed to bed, retiring for the night, and the lights went out, and it got real quiet, and after just a moment, she leaned over and said, "Harold, do you remember what you did 50 years ago on this night?" He said, "No, what?" And she said, "Well, you gave me a hug goodnight before we went to sleep." He said, "Oh, okay." So he leaned over and kind of half-heartedly gave her a hug. It was quiet for a moment. And then she said, "Harold, do you remember what you did 50 years ago on this night?" And he said, "What?" And she said, "Well, you gave me a kiss on the cheek before we went to sleep." He said, "Oh, all right." And so he kind of leaned over again and half-heartedly, grumpily gave her a kiss on the cheek. And it was quiet for a few more moments, and he was almost to sleep, almost asleep. And she said again, "Harold, do you remember what else you did 50 years ago on this night?" He said, "What?" And she said, "Well, you nibbled on my ear." And he threw the covers off and stormed out of the room. And she said, "Harold, where are you going?" He said, "I'm going to get my teeth." And marriages are filled with plenty of ups and downs. And that story's mostly unrelated. But the point is, you know, times are going to come and times are going to go. And marriage is going to be full of joy and sorrow. And beauty is going to fade. And muscles are going to ache and teeth are going to crack. But true commitment outlasts it all. And for those of us who have been married for a while, and those of you who are going to be married, I hope you understand the importance of commitment. With commitment in your marriage, with God in the middle, things can last. You can enjoy marriage. You can enjoy the journey due to your commitment to one another and because God is in the middle. You've probably noticed throughout this marriage series, as we've gone through the Old Testament, there are very few, if any, positive examples, you know, shining moments of marriages. There just really are not many. But throughout these stories, throughout the Bible, when we see God's hand at work, oftentimes it's in imperfection and sometimes even because of imperfection. Well, this morning we're going to take a look at a story of Abraham and Sarah. And they certainly were not perfect. Their marriage was far from it, in fact. Their life was marked with patience and confusion and foolishness and frustration and excitement and promises and waiting on God. And from them, I think that we can learn a few things that I hope will be helpful to us that have been married or will get married at some point or giving counsel to others. So today, that being said, I have four things about commitment I want to share with you from the life of Sarah and Abraham. The first one is this. Commitment is strengthened by a mutual faith. Commitment is strengthened by a mutual faith. If you both share a commitment to Christ, you share something that is powerful, something that is incredible. I've been at many weddings through the years, and I've done some premarital counseling and done a few weddings myself. And I've seen other preachers use this, but we kind of use this image of a triangle. You know, the husband and the wife, the bride and the groom are the base of this triangle, and God is at the top. And the point is, you know, as you move closer to God, you grow closer together. As you grow closer to God, you move closer together. That's true. I hope that you've found that in your marriage. I have found that in mine. I think it's important that we remember that today. So Abraham and Sarah, though, they start off with very different situations when it comes to their faith. They both grew up in Ur, and Sarah has to leave everything behind, including her family and friends and even her hometown, to go on this journey, to be involved in this marriage with Abraham. They don't have any definite ending in mind. They don't know where they're headed. They just know that God has sent them. I think it's important that we understand what Ur was about, what Sarah left back in Ur. Archaeologists have discovered that Ur was a city with brick homes. Some of them were even two-story. That might be hard to imagine today looking back, but they've found evidence of that. A very advanced city for its time period. They've excavated, in fact, signs that there were even indoor plumbing, very rudimentary, but very basic indoor plumbing in some homes. It was a very upscale place. Abraham and his father Terah, they were wealthy. They had herds and huge flocks and servants, and they would have lived very well in Ur. But the city of Ur also offered a lot of, you know, materialistic culture, luxurious things, and it was renowned for their study of astrology and astronomy. So Sarah is leaving all this. I mean, it'd be like leaving the Denver, you know, Performing Arts Center, or the Denver Zoo, or the Denver Theater, or Park Meadows Mall, or some upscale, you know, amenities that we have here in Grand Junction. Whatever it is, leaving that behind and embracing this life of, you know, this nomad lifestyle. Living in tents, moving from place to place. So she gave up all these physical amenities. In some ways, many of you have done that for a spouse. Maybe you followed them as they pursued a new career, a new job opportunity. Maybe the two of you decided, hey, we want our children to grow up in this school district, and so we're going to move there, career, whatever it is, an education. And so you launched and you left home and went a different direction. The other part, the other important part about Ur that we need to understand is that the people of Ur, they worshipped idols. There were many temples to lowercase gods. Joshua 24 tells us that Terah, Abraham's father, he lived on the other side of the river and worshipped other gods. But Abraham was different. He chose, I'm going to worship the one true God. And Sarah joined him in that. They chose to do the same thing. They were in this mutual faith together. And so even though they had this upbringing that was very different and didn't prepare them for such, they chose to worship the one true God, Jehovah. Interesting, if you notice in Hebrews chapter 11, the Hall of Faith chapter, we call it, Sarah is the first woman mentioned there. They were united in their faith. They agreed that God would be at the center of their marriage, at the center of their relationship. So whenever I talk with couples who are dating or going to be dating or engaged or set to be married, one of the things I emphasize is that you both share the same faith. It's important that the other individual that you're considering entering this lifelong relationship with share the same faith. They be committed to Christ like you. Paul says in the New Testament in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14, do not be yoked together with unbelievers. For what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? And so this relationship from friendship to dating to as it moves towards marriage, we want to make certain that they're both on the same spiritual page, because it's going to matter. It's going to be a big key to cultivating commitment. So commitment is strengthened when you share a mutual faith. Well, just for a moment, what about the individual who comes to Christ after they're already married? What about them? Well, Paul says some other things about that. In the church in Corinth, that was the case as well. I mean, Christianity explodes on the scene, and all of a sudden, people are leaving Judaism and choosing to follow Christ, choosing to accept Him as the Messiah. And so now they are faced with this situation where their spouse doesn't believe. What do I do? Do I leave them? Do I stay with them? 1 Corinthians 7, Paul gives them some advice. He says, don't divorce your mate. Try to lead them to Christ. The Bible commentator William Barclay says this, in a marriage partnership between a believer and unbeliever, the very association may be the means of saving the soul of the unbelieving partner. 1 Peter chapter 3, Peter wrote this in verses 1 and 2, wives, in the same way, be submissive to your husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives when they see the purity and reverence of your lives. So be an example. Set the pace. Someone described this as the quiet leading of a lovely life. And so pray, men and women, pray for that unbelieving spouse. Let them see the love of Christ in you. See how you interact with them and your family members and others. But it's important when you have a choice from the beginning to have a common mutual faith. Second thing about commitment this morning I want to share with you is this. Commitment works through major challenges. Some of our marital challenges are the result of our own mistakes. And that's what we're going to see with Abraham and Sarah this morning. As they go through Egypt on their way to the land that God was taking them to, they encounter a pretty rough time. Genesis chapter 12, if you have your Bible, verses 10 through 16. Now there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to live there for a while because the famine was severe. As he was about to enter Egypt, he said to his wife Sarah, I know what a beautiful woman you are. When the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Then they will kill me, but will let you live. Say you're my sister, so that I'll be treated well for your sake, and my life will be spared because of you. When Abram came to Egypt, the Egyptians saw that she was a very beautiful woman, and when Pharaoh's officials saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh, and she was taken into his palace. He treated Abram well for her sake, and Abram acquired sheep and cattle, male and female donkeys, men servants and maid servants, and camels. Wives, listen up for just a moment. There are times when you should not agree with your husband. And this is one of those times. But you know what happens next? The Lord afflicts a serious disease on Pharaoh and his household, and the secret is exposed, and you know, honesty comes out finally, and Pharaoh realizes that Abraham's lie is why God has done this to him. Pharaoh says, "Hey, take your wife and get out of here." Abraham makes a foolish decision in order to save his own hide. Now you should understand, it wasn't uncommon culturally during that time to, you know, lie about an attractive wife in order to save themselves. But Abraham's decision, he's a man of God. I mean, it's demeaning to the institution of marriage. It's selfish. It displays a lack of trust in God and in His faithfulness. And so Sarah goes along with it. And at this point in time, I think it's important that we realize that their faith together is at a very immature state. Their relationship together is not where it ought to be. But in spite of their decisions, in spite of their mistakes, it's going to get better. They're going to improve a little bit as they go along the way. Scripture doesn't tell us about the private conversations that they have with one another. We don't know all of that. But we know that they stay together. I want to ask you a question. And don't raise your hands. I'm just going to tell you right now, okay? But do you ever get mad at your spouse? I mean, we all do at some point. I saw someone shaking their head. They're single. But we all do, right? At times, you know, one of us makes a hurtful comment, or someone embarrasses someone in public, or someone spends money without the other person's blessing. And so we upset one another. We hurt one another. It's like the guy who said to his wife, "You know, I wouldn't marry you again if you were the last woman on the face of the earth." And she said, "No, you wouldn't. You would be killed in the stampede." So, come on. I mean, first service gets all my jokes. I don't understand it. But the key to resolving conflicts and overcoming these challenges and things that take place, oftentimes even though they seem insurmountable, is wrapped up in our priorities and our commitment to one another. And so Abraham, even you know, in the face of sin and selfishness and stupidity, Abraham and Sarah were committed to one another. They stuck it out. Third way to cultivate commitment. Commitment survives the ups and downs of life. God had promised to Sarah and Abraham that they would have, you know, a huge amount of offspring. But they're getting older and older and still no children. And so whether or not you specifically understand that difficulty of not being able to have children or not, no matter what the case, you surely understand the difficulty of when life does not go the way you thought it would. And so the circumstances of life, you know, they have a way of straining relationships and making them difficult, especially in the case of marriage sometimes. Definitely, you know, with children and closest friends, but when expectations aren't met, hope, you know, seems to be diminished and dashed, and if we're not careful, molehills become mountains and we make huge issues of little things. And I have to tell you, Satan would love nothing more than to turn your closest, who ought to be your closest ally, into your largest enemy. And don't let him do that. Look what happens here in Genesis 16. Earlier we saw Abraham making a huge blunder, lying about this, you know, identity of his own wife to save his own hide. And now in Genesis 16, at this point it still hasn't gotten much better. Sarah's going to make her own huge mistake, and Abraham's going to go right along with it. Chapter 16, verses 1 and 2. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. So she said to Abram, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I could build a family through her." Abram agreed to what Sarah said. Men, word to the wise. There are times when you should not agree with your wife. And this is one of those times. But again, this man of God, he doesn't even hesitate. She says, "Hey, sleep with the maid." And immediately he says, "Oh, okay." And if there was ever a place for this, you know, patriarch to ponder or allow for a pregnant pause, But Sarah, she suggests it. And Abraham is already on his way heading out the door. You know, men are accused of having a one-track mind, and Abraham does not help us in our defense at all here. I don't know if you saw the story that took place down in Atlanta about a year ago, but there was a personal ad taken out in the paper in Atlanta, and this is what it said. Single black female seeks male companionship. Ethnicity not important. I'm a very good-looking girl who loves to play. I love long walks in the woods, hunting, camping, fishing trips, cozy winter nights lying by the fire. Candlelight dinners will have me eating out of your hand. Show me some affection and watch me respond. I'll be at the front door when you get home from work wearing only what nature gave me. Kiss me and I'm yours. Call 404-875-6420 and ask for Daisy. 15,000 men responded to this ad, and when the call was answered, they reached the Atlanta Humane Society, where a 9-week-old black Labrador retriever named Daisy was waiting to be adopted. True story. It's a safe statement to make that men sometimes can put more emphasis on the physical rather than the emotional or the spiritual. And so when Sarai says to Abraham, hey, go and sleep with my servant Hagar, Abraham should have taken his role as a longtime believer in God. He should have led his wife and said, honey, I hear what you're saying. I even understand why you're saying it. I know what we've gone through. We've waited a long time to have a child, but my faithfulness to you is so much more important than whether or not we have a child right now. Besides, God has promised us, and God is faithful. And regardless of our age, as crazy as it sounds, I'm going to trust his plan. But that's not what Abraham says. It's not what Abraham does. And it's not the way the story unfolds. Chapter 16, verses 3 through 6. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarai said to Abram, you are responsible for the wrong I'm suffering. I put my servant in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises you. May the Lord judge between you and me. Your servant is in your hands, Abram said. Do with her whatever you think best. Then Sarah mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. So Hagar becomes pregnant and has a son named Ishmael. And I want to make certain that you understand this. The majority of the problems and conflicts in the Middle East today are a direct result from this chapter in the Bible. Ishmael and his descendants at odds with the son that Abram and Sarah are going to have in about 13 years later, Isaac and his descendants, battling over inheritance, battling over whose land it really is. But some 13 years later, after the normal childbearing years have passed, Sarah gets pregnant and Isaac is born, and God's promise that Abraham's descendants will be numerous like the stars in the sky now becomes possible. Chapter 21, verses 1 through 3. Now the Lord was gracious to Sarah, as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised. Sarah became pregnant and bore a son to Abraham in his old age at the very time God had promised him. Abraham gave the name Isaac to the son Sarah bore him. So Abraham and Sarah, even though this was surely one of the most painful times in their lives, they stayed together. They were committed. When the longest wait in human history for a couple waiting to have a child, to be able to have a child, and then for God finally to bless them. Here's the fourth and final key about commitment I want to share this morning. Commitment means being faithful until death. Through good and bad, Abraham and Sarah, they stood together. When it was all said and done, they hung in there, they stuck it out. Genesis chapter 25, verse 10 says this. There, Abraham was buried with his wife, Sarah. There are a lot of things that we don't know. But we know this much. There, Abraham and his wife, Sarah, they were buried together. They stuck it out. They saw it through. They hung in there. They were committed to one another. Now you may have noticed throughout the message today in our discussion about commitment that at times it can sound a little bit negative. I mean, and not once did I say, hey, it's going to be great fun to always be committed to one another. It's always going to be easy to be committed to one another. You're always going to feel like keeping your commitment no matter what. You know, I didn't say that because I got to tell you, it's probably not quite true. I mean, the realistic view of marriage is there will be problems. There will be conflicts. There will be challenges. But working through them and inviting God into the process makes all the difference in the world. Now, don't misunderstand me. Don't hear me wrong. Very few things have brought me greater joy than my marriage. I enjoy spending time with my wife and, you know, running or walking, we call it, walking, jogging, you know, together. And talking about life and talking about the kids and talking about school and solving problems together and doing things as a family together. Very few things bring me greater joy. And I've seen the same thing in many of your marriages as well. Those of you who love being married and you can see it, you almost exert this aura of, we love each other. And we're committed and life is fun and we're in a good place. But I have to tell you, life will be difficult at times. It will be tough. And you know, we say, well, I'm committed to this person. And you know, that sounds all great and lovely and flowery as long as things are going well. But you don't know how strong your commitment is until life gets difficult. Because when life is easy and, you know, decisions are mutual and the laughter comes easily, that doesn't take commitment. The commitment's there, but you don't even notice it. But when life is tough and you've lost a loved one, or the money just doesn't quite stretch as it ought, or difficult decisions have to be made, that's when you learn whether or not you're truly committed. When your wife hurts you with the words that she says, commitment can help overcome. When he hurts you with the crazy thing that he does and you just want to shoot him, commitment can help you make it past that. When he prioritizes work or whatever over you or family, or when she prioritizes the kids over you, commitment to your marriage between the two of you before God can help you make it through those difficult situations with love and respect, not with anger and hate. And so marriages are always going to have problems. They're always going to have difficulty. Hopefully you never encounter things like Abraham and Sarah encountered. Hopefully we never make those types of blunders. But my point is this, commitment can help you overcome them. Commitment to one another, God in the middle, growing closer to God, growing closer together, can help you overcome. A little short on the message today. Don't get your hopes up. But let's pray together. And we'll continue in worship.